I'm borrowing short stories. Collected short stories of Louis L'Amour. Unguarded moment. Arthur Ferdice had never done a criminal thing in his life, nor had the idea of doing anything unlawful ever seriously occurred to him. The wallet that lay beside his chair was not only full, it was literally stuffed. It lay on the floor near his feet where it had fallen. His action was as purely automatic as an action can be. He let his racing form slip from his lap and covered the billfold. Then he sat very still, his heart pounding. The fat man who had dropped the wallet was talking to a friend on the far side of the box. As far as Ferdice could see, his own action had gone unobserved. It had been foolish, a foolish thing to do. Ferdice did not need the money. He had been paid a week's salary only a short time before and had won $40 on the last raise. With his heart pounding heavily, his mouth dry, he made every effort to be casual as he picked up his form and the wallet beneath. Trying to appear as natural as possible, he opened the billfold under the cover of the form, extracted the money, and shifted the bills to his pocket. The horses were rounding into the home stretch, and when the crowd sprang to its feet, he got up too. As he straightened, he shied the wallet with an underhand flip under the feet of the crowd off to his left. His heart was still pounding. Blindly, he stared out at the track. He was a thief. He had stolen money. He had appropriated it. How much? Panic touched him suddenly. Suppose he had been seen. If someone had seen him, the person might wait to see if he returned the wallet. If he did not, the person might come down and accuse him. What if, even now, there was an officer waiting for him? Perhaps he should leave. Get away from there as quickly as possible. Cool sanity pervaded him. No, that would never do. He must remain where he was. Go through the motions of watching the races. If he were accused, he could say he'd won the money. He had won money, $40. The man at the window might remember his face, but not the amount he had given him. Ferdice was in the box that belonged to his boss, Ed Charlton. And no friend of Charlton's would ever be thought a thief. He sat still, watching the races, relaxing as much as he could. Surprisingly, the fat man who had dropped the wallet did not miss it. He did not even put a hand to his pocket. After the sixth race, several people got up to leave, and Ferdice followed suit. It was not until he was unlocking his car that he realized there was a man at his elbow. He was a tall, dark-eyed, handsome young man, too smoothly dressed, too slick. And there was something sharply feral about his eyes. He was smiling unpleasantly. "Nice work," he said. "Very nice. Now, how about a split?" Arthur Ferdice kept his head. Inside, he seemed to feel all his bodily organs contract as if with chill. "I'm afraid I don't understand you. What was it you wanted? The brightly feral eyes hardened just a little, although the smile remained. A split. That's what I want. I saw you get that billfold. Now let's bust it open and see what we got. Billfold? Fordyce stared at him coldly, although he was quivering inside with fear. He had been seen. What if he should be arrested? What if Alice heard? Or Ed Charlton? Why, that fat man might be a friend of Ed's. Don't give me that, the tall young man was saying. I saw the whole thing. Now, I'm getting a split, or I'll holler bull. I'll go to the cops. You aren't out of the grounds yet, and even if you were, I could find out who used Ed Charlton's box today. Fordyce stood stock still. This could not be happening to him. It was preposterous. Whatever had possessed him. Yet, what explanation could he give now? He had thrown away the wallet itself, a sure indication that he intended to keep the money. Come on, bud. The smile was sneering now. You might as well hand it over. There was plenty there. I had my eye on Linton all afternoon. He always carries plenty of dough. Linton, George Linton. How many times had Ed Charlton spoken of him? They were golfing companions. They hunted and fished together. They had been friends at college. Even if the money were returned, Fordyce was sure he would lose his job, his friends, Alice. He would be finished, completely finished. I never intended to do it, he protested. It was an accident. Yeah, the eyes were contemptuous. I could see that. I couldn't have done it more accidentally myself. Now, hand it over. There was $1,400 in 50s and 20s. With fumbling fingers, Fordyce divided it. The young man took his bills and folded them with the hands of a lover. He grinned suddenly. Nice work. With my brains and your in, we'd make a team. He pocketed the bills, anxious to be gone. Be seeing you. Arthur Fordyce did not reply. Cold and shaken, he stared after the fellow.
Goodness me.
Days fled swiftly past. Fordyce avoided the track, worked harder than ever. Once he took Alice to the theater and twice to dinner. Then at a party the Charltons gave, he came face to face with George Linton. The fat man was jovial. How are you, Fordyce? Ed tells me you're his right hand at the office. Good to know you. Thanks. He spoke without volition. Didn't I see you at the track a couple weeks ago? I was in Charlton's box. Oh, yes. I remember you now. I thought your face seemed familiar. He shook his head wryly. I won't forget that day. My pocket was picked for nearly $2,000. Seeing that Alice was waiting, Fordyce excused himself and joined her. Together they walked to the terrace and stood there in the moonlight. How lovely she was, and to think he had risked all this, risked it on the impulse of a moment. And for what? She was looking up at him, and he spoke suddenly, filled with the sudden panic born of the thought of losing her. "Alice," he gripped her arms. "Alice, will you marry me?" "Why, Arthur," she protested, laughing in her astonishment. "How rough you are. Do you always grab a girl so desperately when you ask her to marry you?" He released her arms, embarrassed. I guess I was violent," he said. "But I just, well, I couldn't stand to lose you, Alice." Her eyes were wide and wonderfully soft. "You aren't going to, Arthur," she said quietly. "I'm going to stay with you." "Then, you mean, yes, Arthur." Driving home that night, his heart was bounding. She would marry him. How lovely she was. How beautiful her eyes had been as she looked up at him. He drove into the garage, snapped off the lights, and got his keys. It was not until he came out to close the doors that he saw the glow of a suddenly inhaled cigarette in the shadow cast by the shrubbery almost beside him. "Hello, Fordyce. How's tricks?" It was the man from the track. "My name's Chaffee. Bill Chaffee." "What are you doing here? What do you want?" "That's a beautiful babe you got. I've seen your picture on the society pages." "I'm sorry. I don't intend to discuss my fiance with you. It's very late and I must be getting to bed. Good night." "Abrupt, aren't you?" Chaffee adopted a George Raft manner. "Is that Chaffee?" "Looks like Chaffee to me." Chaffee adopted a George Raft manner. "Not going to invite an old friend inside for a drink. An old friend from out of town. One who wants to meet your friends." Arthur Ford, I saw it clearly then, saw it as clearly as he would ever see anything. He knew what this slick young man was thinking, that he would use this hold over Fordyce for introductions and for better chances to steal. Probably he had other ideas too. Girls and their money. "Look, Chaffee," he said harshly. "Whatever between us is finished. Now beat it. And don't come back." Chaffee had seen a lot of movies. He knew what came next. He snapped his cigarette into the grass and took a quick step forward. "Why, you cheap thief. You think you can brush me off like that? Listen, I got you where I want you. And before I'm through, I'll have everything you got." Chaffee's voice was rising with some inner emotion of triumph or hatred. "You think you're so much. Figure you can brush me off, do you?" He stepped close. "What if I got to that fancy babe of yours and told her what I know? What if I go to the Linton and tell him? You're a thief, Fordyce. A damn thief. You and that fancy babe of yours. Why?" Fordyce hit him. The action was automatic and it was unexpected. In the movies, it was always the tough guy who handed out the beatings. His fist flew up and caught Chaffee on the jaw. Chaffee's feet flew up and he went down. The back of his neck hit in the bumper with a sickening crack. Then his body slipped slowly to the ground. Arthur Fordyce stood very still, staring down at the crumpled form. His breath was coming into great gasps, and his fist was still clenched hard. Some instinct told him the man was dead. "Mr. Fordyce." It was his neighbor, Joe Neal, calling. "Is something wrong?" Fordyce dropped to one knee and touched the man's head. It lolled loosely, too loosely, He felt for the heart. Nothing. He bent over the man's face, but felt no breath. Nothing. Neil was coming out on the lawn, pulling his belt tight. Fordyce, is anything wrong? He got to his feet slowly. Yes, Joe. I wish you'd come down here. I've been held up, and I think I've killed him. Joe Neil hurried up, flashlight in hand. He threw the light on the fallen man. Good heavens, he gasped. What happened? He was waiting there by the tree. He stepped out with his hand in his pocket, you know, like he had a gun. I hit him before I realized. That was the story, and he made it stick. For several days, it was the talk of all his friends. Fordyce had killed a hold-up man. That took nerve. And a punch, too. Didn't know he had it in him. Of course, it was the bumper that actually broke his neck. Still, had there been any doubts? And there were none. A check of Chaffee's record would have removed them. He had done time and was on parole. He had gone up for armed robbery and had been arrested a score of times for investigation. He was suspected of rolling drunks and for various acts of petty pilfering and slugging. A week passed and a second week. Arthur Fordyce threw himself into his work, never talking about what had happened. Others forgot it, too, except Joe Neal, once commenting on it to his wife. He looked puzzled and said, "You know, I'd have sworn I heard voices that night. I'd have sworn it." "You might have. They might have argued." "I imagine that. A man might say a lot when excited and not remember it." "Oh, yeah." Mm-hmm. That was what his wife said, and it was reasonable enough. Nevertheless, Joe Neal was faintly disturbed by it all. Mm-hmm. He avoided Fordyce. Not that they had ever been friends. Arthur Fordyce had been lucky. No getting away from that. He had been very lucky. And sometimes he thought about it. He felt a cold chill come over him. But it was finished now. Only it wasn't. It was Monday night, 2 weeks after the inquest. The first night he had been home since it had happened. He was sitting in his armchair listening to the radio when the telephone rang. Idly, he lifted it from the cradle. "Mr. Fordyce?" The voice was feminine and strange. "Is this Arthur Fordyce speaking?" There was an instant of silence. Then, "This is Bill Chaffee's girlfriend, Mr. Fordyce. I thought I would call and congratulate you. You seem to be very, very lucky." The cold was there again in the pit of his stomach. I beg your pardon. I'm afraid I don't know what you mean. He told me all about it, Mr. Fordyce. All about that day at the track. All about what he was going to do. Bill had big ideas, Mr. Fordyce. And he thought you were his chance. Only he thought you were scared. He got too close to you, didn't he, Mr. Fordyce?" "I'm sure," he kept his voice composed, "that you are seriously in error. I..." She interrupted with a soft laugh, a laugh that did not cover an underlying cruelty. "I'm not going to be as dumb as Bill was, Mr. Fordyce. I'm not going to come anywhere within your reach. But you're going to pay me. You're going to pay off like a slot machine. $1,000 now and $500 a month from now on. I don't know what you're talking about, but you are probably insane, he said quietly. If you are a friend of Chaffee's, then you know he was a criminal. I am sorry for you, but there's nothing I can do. $1,000 by Friday, Mr. Fordyce, and $500 a month from now on. I don't think you were scared when Bill went to you, but how about the gas chamber, Mr. Fordyce? How about that? What you assume is impossible. He fought to keep his voice controlled. It's absurd to think I have that kind of money. She laughed again. But you can get it, Buster. You can get it when it means the difference between life and the gas chamber. Her voice grew brusque. Small bills, understand. Nothing bigger than a 20. Send it to Gertrude Ellis, Box X78, at the central office. Send me that $1,000 by Friday, and send the $500 on the 5th of every month. If you miss by as much as 10 days, the whole story goes to your girlfriend, to your boss, and to the police. The phone clicked. The line buzzed emptily. Slowly, Fordyce replaced the phone. So there it was. Now he had not only disgrace in prison before him, but the gas chamber. A single mistake. An instant when his reason was in abeyance. And here he was, trapped. He could call her bluff. He could refuse. The woman was obviously unprincipled, and she had sounded vindictive. She would certainly follow through as she threatened. For hours, he paced the floor, racking his brain for some way out, some avenue of escape. He could go to Charlton, confess everything, and ask for help. Charlton would give it to him, for he was that kind of man. But when it was over, he would drop Fordyce quickly and quietly. Alice, his future, everything depended on finding some other way, some alternative. If something should happen to this woman, and it might, people were killed every day. They were accidents. He shied away from the idea that lay behind this. But slowly it forced its way into his consciousness. He was considering murder. No, never that. He would not. He could not. He had killed Chaffee, but that had been different. It had not been murder, although if all the facts were known, it might be considered so. It had been an accident. All he had done was strike out. If he had killed now, deliberately and with intent, it would be different. He ran his fingers through his hair and stared blindly at the floor. Accidentally, he caught a glimpse of his face in the mirror. He looked haggard, beaten. But he was not beaten. There was a way out. There had to be. Morning found him on the job, working swiftly and silently. He handled the few clients who called, talked with them, and straightened out their problems. He was aware that Charlton was watching him. Finally, at noon, the boss came over. Fordyce, he said, this thing has worried you. You're doing a fine job this morning, so it looks as though you're getting it whipped. But nevertheless, I think a few days' rest will put you right up to snuff. You just go home now. And don't come in until Monday. Go out of town. See a lot of Alice. Anything. But relax. Thanks. A flood of relief went over Fordyce as he got up, and genuine gratitude must have showed in his eyes, for Charlton smiled. I do need rest. Sure, Ed put a hand on his shoulder. You call Alice. Take her for a drive. Wonderful girl, that. You're lucky. Good connections, too, he added, almost as an afterthought. The sun was bright in the street, and he stood there thinking. He would call Alice, make a date if possible. He had to do that much, for Ed would be sure to comment later. Then he must find this woman, this Gertrude Ellis. He got through the afternoon without a hitch. He and Alice drove out along Ocean Drive. Parked by the sea, and then stopped for dinner. It was shortly after 10 when he finally dropped her at her home. He remembered what the police had said about Bill Chaffee. They had known about him, and they had mentioned that he had been one of several known criminals who frequented a place called Eddie's Bar. If Chaffee had gone there, it was possible his girl did too. It was a shadowy place with one bartender and a row of leather-covered stools and a half-dozen booths. He picked out a stool and ordered a drink. He was halfway down his second bourbon and soda before the first lead came to him. A tall, Latin-looking young man was talking to the bartender. Gracie been around? I haven't seen her since Chaffee bought it. You figuring on moving in there? Are you crazy? That broad gives me the shivers. She's a looker, all right, but she'd cut your heart out for a buck. Bill handled her. You mean she handled him? She was the brains of that setup. Leave it to Bill to try to pick up a fast buck. Yeah, but look at him now. There was silence. And Fordyce sipped his drink unconcernedly, waiting. After a while, it started again. She's probably working that bar on 6th Street. Maybe. She said the other day she was gonna quit. That she was expecting a legacy. A few moments later, Fordyce finished his drink and left the place. He went to 6th Street, studied the bars as he drove along. It might be any one of them. He tried a couple, but without luck. The next morning, he slept late. While he was shaving, he studied his face in the mirror. He told himself he did not look like a murderer. But then, what did murderers look like? They were just people. He dressed carefully, thinking as he dressed. To get the money, Gertrude Ellis would have to go to the box. She would not expect him to be watching, since she would probably believe he would be at work. Even so, he would have to be careful, for she would be careful herself. She might walk by and merely glance in at first. He would have to get her to open the box. He considered that, then had an idea. Shuffling through his own mail, he found what he wanted. It was an advertisement of the type mailed to box holder or occupant. He withdrew the advertising matter to make sure his own name was not on it. Then he carefully removed the address with ink eradicator and substituted the number she had given him. Her true name would probably not be. Her true name would probably be not unlike Gertrude Ellis, which was obviously assumed. The first name was Gracie, and it was a fairly safe bet. The last would begin with an E, unless, as sometimes happened, she used the name of a husband or some friend. Considering the situation, he had another idea. Eddie's Bar and 6th Street were not far apart. Hence, she must live somewhere in that vicinity. He returned to Eddie's that night, and the bartender greeted him briefly. They exchanged a few comments, and then Fordyce asked, "Many babes come in here?" "Yeah, now and again. Most of them are bags. Once in a while, something good shows up." He went away to attend to the wants of another customer, and Arthur Fordyce waited, stalling over his drink, listening. He heard nothing. It was much later when he had finished this third drink and was turning to look around that he bumped into someone. She was about to sit down, and he collided with her outstretched arm. "Oh, I'm sorry, pardon me." "That's all right." She was a straight-haired brunette with rather thin lips and cool eyes. But she was pretty, damn pretty. Her clothes were not like those Alice wore, but she did have a style of her own. She ordered a drink, and he ignored her. After a minute, she got up and went to the ladies' room. The bartender strolled over. "Speaking of babes," he said, "there's a cute one. Should be about ready to. She's fresh out of boyfriends." "Her? How come?" The bartender shrugged. "Runs with some fast company sometimes. Her boyfriend tried to make a quick buck with a gun and got killed. Chaffee. Maybe you read about it." "Chaffee?" Fordyce looked puzzled, although inside he was jumping. "Don't recall the name." He hesitated. "Introduce me?" "You don't need it. Just buy her a drink." Then the bartender grinned. "But if you go home with her, take your own bottle and pour the drinks yourself and don't pass out." "You mean she'd roll me?" "I didn't say that, chum. I didn't say anything. But you look like a good guy. Just take care of yourself. After all," he added, "a guy can have a good time without making a sucker of himself." The girl returned then and sat down on her stool. He waited out her drink. And as she was finishing it, he turned. "How about having one with me? I feel I owe it to you after bumping you like that." She smiled quickly. "Oh, that's all right. Yes, I'll drink with you." Her name was Gracie Turk. She had been divorced several years ago. They talked about dance bands, movies, swimming. She liked to drink, she admitted, but usually did her drinking at home. "I'd like that," he said. "Why don't we pick up a bottle and go there?" She hesitated, then smiled. "All right, let's go." Fordyce glanced back as he went out. The bartender grinned and made a circle of his thumb and forefinger. "Not tonight," Fordyce told himself. "Whatever happens, not tonight. He will remember this." They got the bottle and went to her apartment. It was small, cheaply furnished with pretensions towards elegance. Bored, he still managed to seem interested and mix the drinks himself. He let her see that he had money on him and suddenly recalled that he was expecting a business call at night. "From back east, you know," he said by way of explanation. He left, but with a date for the following evening. An hour later, he called back and canceled his date. His call had come, he said, and he would be out of town. He made his plans with utmost care. He drove out of town and deliberately wound along dusty roads for several hours, letting his car gather dust. In town, at the same time, he carefully chose a spot at which to dispose of the body. At 8, he drove around and parked his car near the entrance to the alley behind the girl's apartment. There was a light in the window, so we went into the front entrance, hoping desperately that he would meet no one. Luck was with him, and he reached her door safely. It was around a corner in a corridor off the main hall. At the end was a door to the back stairs. He tapped lightly and then heard the sound of heels. The door was opened, and Gracie Turk stepped back in surprise. Al. That was the name he had given her. I thought you were out of town. Missed my train, and I just had a wild idea. You might not have gone out. Come in, she stepped back. I was just fixing something to eat. Want a sandwich or a drink? He closed the door behind him and looked at her shoulders and the back of her head. That coldness was in the pit of his stomach again. His mouth felt dry, and the palms of his hands were wet. He kept wiping them off as if they were already. He shook himself and accepted the drink she had fixed for him. She smiled quickly, but her eyes seemed cold. Well, drink up. There's more where that came from. I'll go get things ready, and then we'll eat. We'll just stay home tonight. She had good legs, and the seams in her stockings were straight. He was cold. Maybe the drink would fix him up. He drank half of it in a gulp. It was lousy whiskey. Lousy. The words of the bartender at Eddie's came back to him. Take your own bottle, he had said, and pour your own drinks. He stared at the glass, put it down suddenly. He sat down abruptly. She would be coming in soon. He glanced hastily around, then took the drink and reaching back under the divan. Well, that's what I'm gonna call it right now. Back under the divan, poured it little by little over the thick carpet. When she came back into the room, he was sitting there holding his empty glass. Thanks, he commented. Let me get some for you. She smiled, but her eyes were still cold and calculating. She seemed to be measuring him as she took the glass from his hand. I'll just fill this up again. Why don't you lay down? All right, he said, and suddenly made up his mind. He would not wait. It would be now. She might. If he passed out, she would open his billfold. And in his billfold was his identification. He started to get up, but the room seemed to spin. He sat down, suddenly filled with panic. He was going. He got his hand into his pocket, fumbled for the identification card. He got it out of the window of the billfold and shoved it down another pocket. The money wasn't much, only he had been hearing voices, a girl's and a man's, for some time. The girl was speaking now. I don't care where you drop him. Just take him out of here. The fool didn't have half the money he had the other night. Not half. All this trouble for a lousy $40. Why? I'd bet he had. What's the matter? Hey. The man's voice was hoarse. Do you know who this is? Who is it? What does it matter? Fordyce lay very still. Slowly but surely he was recovering his senses. He could hear the man move back. I don't want this, Gracie. Take back your saw book. This is hot. I want no part of him. None at all. What's the matter? She was coming forward. What have you got there? Don't kid me. His voice was hoarse with anger. I'm getting out of here. Just you try to ring me in on your dirty work. Johnny, have you gone nuts? What's the matter? Her voice was strident. You mean you don't know who this is? This is Fordyce, the guy who knocked off Bill. There was a dead silence while she absorbed that. Fordyce heard a crackle of paper. That letter, it had been in his pocket. It must have fallen out. Fordyce. She sounded stunned. He must have found out where I was. How the... Her voice died away. I'm getting out of here. I want no part of killing a guy. Don't be a fool. She was angry. I didn't know who the sap was. I met him at Eddie's. He flashed a roll. And I just figured it was an easy take. What gives, Gracie? The man's voice is prying. What's behind this? I just was going to take the sap for a plenty, that's all. She stopped talking, then started again. Bill saw him grab a wallet some guy dropped. This guy didn't return it, so Bill shook him for half of it. Then Bill figured on more, and he wouldn't stand for it. So you moved in? Why not? He didn't know who I was or where I was. What I can't figure is how he found out. The guy must be psychic. Arthur Fordyce kept his eyes closed and listened. While he listened, his mind was working. He was a fool, an insane fool. How could he ever have conceived the idea of murder? He knew now he could never have done it. Never. It wasn't in him to kill or even to plan so cold-bloodedly. Suddenly, all he wanted was to get out, to get away without trouble. Should he lie still and wait to find out what would happen? Or should he get up and try to bluff it out? What are you going to do now? Gracie Turk did not reply. Minutes ticked by, and then the man turned toward the door. I'm getting out of here, he said. I don't want any part of this. I'd go for dumping the guy if I was just drunk. But I want no part of murder. Who's talking about murder? Grace's voice was shrill. Get out if you're yellow. Fordyce opened one eye a crack. Gracie was facing the other way, not looking directly at him. He put his hands on the floor, rolled over, and got to his feet. The man sprang back, falling over his chair, and Gracie turned quickly, her face drawn and vicious. Fordyce felt his head spin, but he stood there, looking at him. Gracie Turk stared, swore viciously. Give him his 10, Fordyce told her. Out of the money you took from me. I will, like, give it to him. He won't go for a killing, and you don't dare start anything now because he'd be a witness. For that matter, he would be a witness against me, too. That's right, the man said hastily. It was the same Latin-looking man he had seen in Eddie's. Give me the saw buck and I'll get out of here, but fast. Gracie's eyes flared, her lips curled. What do you think you're pulling anyway? How'd you find me? Who told you? Fordyce forced himself to smile. What's difficult about finding you? You're not very clever, Gracie. Suddenly he saw his way clear, and saw with more emphasis. not at all clever. The idea was so simple that it might work. He was no murderer, nor was he a thief. He had only been a fool. Now, if he could assume the nerve and the indifference it would take, he could get safely out of this. "Look," he said quietly, "like Chaffee, you walked into this by accident. He misunderstood what he saw and passed it on to you. And neither of you had any idea but making a fast buck. Bill," and he knew it sounded improbable, "stepped into a trap baited for another guy. You know as well as I do that Bill was never very smart. He was neither as smart nor as lucky as you. You're going to get out of this without tripping." "What are you talking about?" Gracie was both angry and puzzled. "The wallet I picked up." Fordyce made his voice sound impatient. "Was dropped by agreement. We were trying to convince a man who was watching that I was taking a payoff." The story was flimsy, but Gracie would accept a story of a double dealing quicker than any other. "Bill saw it, and I paid off to keep him from crabbing a big deal." "I don't believe it." Her voice was defiant, yet there was uncertainty in her eyes. Was murdering Bill part of the game? He shrugged it off. "Look, Gracie, you knew Bill. He was a big, good-looking guy who couldn't see anything but the way he was going. He thought he had me where the hair was short when he stopped me outside my garage. Once away from that track, I was clean, so he had no hold over me at all. My deal had gone through. We had words, and when he started for me, I hit him. He fell, and his neck hit the bumper. He was a victim of his own foolishness and greed." "That's what you say. Why kill him? He could be annoying. But he could prove nothing. And nobody would have believed him. Nor," he added, "would they believe you." He picked up his hat. "Give this man that 10-spot for his trouble. You keep the rest and charge it up to experience. That's what I would do." The night air was cool on his face when he reached the street. He hesitated, breathing deep, and then walked to his car. At the Charlton's party, 1 week later, he was filling Alice's glass at the punch bowl with George Linton clapped on his shoulder. When George Linton clapped him on the shoulder. "Hey, Art." It was the first time he thought suddenly that anybody had called him Art. "I got my money back. Remember the money I lost at the track? $1,400. It came back to me in the mail. No note, nothing. What do you think of that?" "You were lucky." Fordyce grinned at him. "We're all lucky at times." "Believe me," Linton confided. "If I'd found that $1,400, I'd never have returned it. I'd just have shoved it in my pocket and forgot about it." "That," Art Fordyce said sincerely, "is that what you think?" Wow. Thank you, Jackie boy.